satellite operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rutenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's Ursula, U-R-S-U-L-A, at pacifica.org. I'm Ken Gale of Ecologic on WBAI in New York City. See you next week on Sprouts.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides with me, Robert North. I'll be with you for 2 hours. Stay tuned. And special guest Jillian Greenside at 7:15 for those who want to continue the viewing and reviewing and overviewing the saga of the police department, city council's refusal to deal with the issue of rape. At least that's the perspective of Jillian. What's your perspective? Tune in and find out. 7:15 tonight, and stay with us for 2 hours of Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
Which lie is the one that will take me, and which one?
That certainly sounds seditious. That's Sedition from Strike Anywhere. You're tuned to 101.1 FM. You're also turned, I guess, there as well. But I'm turned toward you, and you're hopefully turned toward me, particularly if you've got a telephone. You're invited to call in. The phone number here for the next 2 hours, and actually probably for the next 2 years, is going to be 427-3772. But my show will end at 8 to be followed by the musical show, generally musical, though there's some Earth First updates, or I should say some environmental updates, with Uncle Dennis from the Cream to the Dregs from 8 to 10, or maybe it's 11. Let me check the schedule so I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
8 to 11 from the Cream to the Dregs. Boy, I should know that. But there it is, the schedule on the wall, reminding me as I go into terminal senility here. Call-in number here is 427-3772 if you'd like to call in. Again, as I mentioned before, we're going to continue our analysis or deconstruction of the City Council with Commissioner for the Prevention of Violence Against Women founder Jillian Greenside, who's also apparently employed by the, still employed in spite of, as she describes it, attempts to get rid of her up at the University of California, employed by the university for rape counseling up there. They've removed a lot of authority from her, but they haven't cut off her voice, and she will be speaking out here at 7:15. If you'd like to look into this issue, you can go to indiebay.org. Boy, I hesitate to try to... I'm having some problems here with the computer in the studio. Every time I put in one window, another one disappears, but I guess that's how it goes. If you go to the Santa Cruz Indie Media website, also known as indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, you can find some material on this rape crisis. The latest story that I and I guess others have posted is called Still More Friendly Fudge from Mayor Riley and Chief Scary on Rape, and it essentially previews this show, and I put it up there last week, and there were some other, I guess, notes and comments, as well as it's got links to the two prior shows that Jillian has done in case you want to check those out. I've also done a little, I've asked the question a number of times about rape in the homeless community, and that was actually initially suggested by our faithful caller, Madison, who often calls in with sometimes alarming allegations, sometimes interesting news. She's a frequent caller, and the issue of rape, of course, is an important one across the entire community, but I tend to focus on homeless civil rights, or lack thereof, and the right to be free from rape seems like an important condition, or right in a certain sense. It's the right to be secure, is what we're talking about. And that's important, but it's not usually something that has to do with authorities overstepping their bounds. In this case, it has to do with authorities apparently not doing enough to investigate these issues and address them. This is not usually my bailiwick, but when I see or am persuaded that the city council and the police department are evading issues in order to maintain a pleasant image for a tourist town, then I become, cranky and try to get people on the air who want to talk about this and give more information. That's going to happen at 7:15. Also encouraging, but something I didn't know about until I read about it on Indie Bay and the news stories, and you'll find a number of news stories about it and a lot of photos, is the peace advocates arrested at the Capitola peace demonstration. Raging Grannies, peace advocates gathered at 41st Avenue in Capitola on June 26th, that's 2 days ago, to protest the ongoing wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. I'm reading from the Indie Bay story. The recent troop surge, which has resulted in greater casualties, not fewer, and the recruitment of at-risk youth by military recruiters, many of whom use lies and manipulation in order to get people to sign up. 10 people engaged in nonviolent civil disobedience and were arrested by Capitola police when they stayed in front of the Army recruiting office door when asked to disperse. And my hat's off to the Raging Grannies of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom and other people who joined them to say no to the war in Iraq and the criminal occupation going on there, now being billed endlessly as Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda. Every news release you read these days talks about the Al-Qaeda linked, the Al-Qaeda inspired, the Al-Qaeda brigades, and in fact, of course, most of the insurgency in Iraq has nothing to do with Al-Qaeda. It's an insurgency by Iraqi nationalists of different stripes, some Sunni, some Shiite, to bump out the Americans, to get the 150,000+ troops and the, I don't know how many military contractors and the permanent military bases being built there out of their country. And, of course, that's being compliantly concealed by the mass media. But to even those who look even, fingernail deep beneath the surface, if you go on the Internet, you can find that the reality is it has to do that most of the attacks are coming from groups that you and I might not be in particular agreement with. It may be fundamentalists of one sort or another, or religiously inspired Shiites or whatever. But they are not connected particularly with Al-Qaeda. Although, frankly, the idea of Al-Qaeda as being this sinister target that the United States government must destroy and in so doing shut down civil liberties at home, establish a massive, even more massive military series of bases overseas in the 737 overt bases we already have, to me, of course, is horseshit. It's preposterous. It's special pleading for military-industrial interests. It's the kind of stuff politicians, including Clinton and Obama and all the rest of these clowns, ride on. And we need, of course, to inject sanity into this discussion by talking about what's really going on. What does this have to do with my main topic, which is civil rights for poor people? Well, poor people in Santa Cruz, of course, have to suffer, and a significant contingent of that proportion of homeless people is vets. I don't actually have any exact numbers, but there are many vets who are outside, homeless, essentially refugees and victims of prior wars and bad treatment by the government. In fact, the first interview I'm going to play is by a local vet who's struggling to restore rights for vets in terms of their ability to run their own vet hall. We've talked about this. There's been controversy about how some forces, apparently, dare I say it, led by Tim Bratton, who manages the vet hall, to kind of make some money off the vet hall by turning it into a, some would say a community resource, some would say a yoga super center. But vets have been complaining, and rather bitterly complaining, that they've been denied access themselves, and they've been losing their control over the vets hall because of these money-making capitalist activities, which have little to do with the original purpose and agreement that the vets had with the hall. Anyway, let's begin with a little street interview or two. I also wanted to mention, though, before we do, while I fully support demonstrations at the recruiting center in Capitola on 41st Avenue, and boy, I hope the next time somebody sends me an email or gives me a call, because I would have been up out there with everybody else at least reviewing it for free radio. I think Bradley of Indie Media did a great job of getting photos, and so did Katya Komisarek and others who are out there taking pictures. Thank you very much for your stories. Looks like at least one, two, three, four different groups of photos and stories on the story, the main story, Peace Advocates Arrested at the Capitola Peace Demonstration, again, on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. I would like to have been there, too, and I think, I wish it had been more broadly announced, or maybe if I'd been more awake, who knows? Got to pay more attention to this stuff or something. No new updates on the Pleasant Care scandal, the bankruptcy closing of the Pleasant Care, nursing home, I guess is the way to put it, which Tenderfoot Tim Rumford talked about at length on the Sunday show, in which he has some articles on the same indiebay.org, Santa Cruz Indie Media. If you want to go there, you can read some of the documents. And it's a grim situation for 222 people who are going to be, apparently, first they're going to suffer a change of management, and then, according to Tim, they're going to be shipped out of the county. I'm not sure what the ultimate outcome was for the Capitola Care Center people in terms of whether they got dumped on the street. I mean, I know that Pleasant Care dumped one guy on the street after he had some diabetic problem, walked away, tried to come back. They wouldn't let him back in, and he wandered around with his colostomy bag for weeks. And Tim talked about him on the air. So maybe, I mean, this is counter and contrary to the current of Tim's story, but maybe it's, is it better that the place go bankrupt and people get sent out of the state? It has to be worse. I don't think they're being sent to better facilities, so don't think that's true, that's something I'd support. Again, you can read more about it on indiebay.org, and you can review the last Bathrop Spears Broadsides show, which aired on free radio on Sunday. I do a show on Sunday from 9:30 to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Let's start out with a street interview here, again, talking about Vets Matters and other matters. And hopefully, if people have reports from the street about problems with police, public safety problems in the community, abuses against the homeless or other groups that you think need to be aired. And I think this is true at any time on free radio. If you have a news story, a breaking news story, please call in and talk about it if you can, or inform the talk show host or the programmer who's on here that you really have some news you want to report. And I think programmers are pretty sympathetic to even interrupting what they're doing to pass on that word. A call-in number is 427-3772, 427-FRSC for Free Radio, or Freak Radio, Santa Cruz. The off-air number if you want to leave a message for Free Radio for a public service announcement, or you want to leave a donation, or you're interested in being a member of the collective, or you want to slam some programmer because you think she or he is just too left-wing or too right-wing or sexist, racist, or just a dirty dog, or possibly a, don't know, attack canines here. But anyway, if you have anything you want to say off-air about Free Radio, not necessarily just about this show, but anything that will be addressed to the Free Radio Collective, you can send it to or call it in to 427-4523. That's the voicemail, 427-4523. And the best way, if you want to be a part of Free Radio, if you find yourself interested in having your own show, which, believe me, is not that hard to do. I'm completely incompetent. Well, my competence is very limited on the air. I wish I were actually learning more about how to work this equipment, and there are Free Radio broadcasters and techies who are willing to help with this and who do give regular seminars. I think I show up for every 83rd seminar, and then only reluctantly if there's no good movies playing at the time. But it's a real way to get an education in radio broadcasting. If you have something to contribute to the community regularly over the air, please consider trying to get a program on Free Radio Santa Cruz, particularly if you don't hear that subject being discussed and you think it needs to be discussed. The website to go to is freakradio.org. FreakRadio, all small letters, all one word, freakradio.org, or www.freakradio.org, if you will. And you can download an application and join Free Radio, potentially. You will have to, of course, go through our rigorous screening process, which I often mock because I'm not a part of it, but it actually is not that hard to get through. They'll ask you to make a demonstration tape or do a demonstration show, and they'll ask you, you know, are you a member of the Klan? You know, are you going to talk about bitches and hoes on the air? And, you know, are you going to talk about, are you going to engage in hate speech? That is to say, you know, argue for Holocaust revisionism and things of that sort, which is a no-no on Free Radio, at least in terms of as an advocacy position. If you want to argue that we need to have, I'm being candid about this, this is full disclosure. If you want to have a show denouncing immigrants and talking about how we don't need them spicks, wops, and niggers here in town, well, you know, you're not going to get into the collective. So it's free speech radio up to a point. Similarly, if you want to have a full-time Zionist show talking about the wonders of the Iraqi government and what a great government it is, you're probably not going to get past this collective. And what that means is, you know, this is a station that tries to represent issues in this community, which, while they may seem to be sort of standard mainline lefty issues in the lefty community, in the broader community in Santa Cruz, as represented by the Sentinel or the Good Times, perhaps, or the Mid-County Post or KSCO, you don't get much direct discussion of these issues. In fact, you get the opposite point of view. You get the Rush Limbaugh point of view. So, I mean, you can tune into, you know, so-called progressive radio stations like the one down in Monterey at the, was it 5:40 a.m. end of the dial? But most of the stuff, even, you know, I guess you can go to public radio, the National Vanilla Radio, and you can get some sort of liberal stuff. But Free Radio is intended to fill a kind of a gap. It's intended to talk about issues that don't get out in the mainstream radio. And in so doing, and I think to some extent, not to the credit of some members of the Free Radio Collective, or most of the collective, I think some issues get censored. Some people get censored. And, you know, the answer to that, of course, is not to spend your time fighting Free Radio. The answer is to get your own radio station. Frankly, that's my belief. You know, get your own. It's not that hard, under $1,000 to get a transmitter. And, yes, it's illegal to have a radio station on the air that is not licensed by the FCC, but it's also true that their rules are unreasonable, that the airwaves are a community resource, that, for example, Free Radio and other stations that could be on the air, if they're done with some respect for bandwidth and so forth, are not a drain, a drag, or any kind of a problem, but rather they are a solution, a potential solution to problems in the community. So if you want to call in and talk about any of this stuff, or you have some announcements to make, or some revelations of some sort, or who knows what. Again, the number to call in is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. You can also call off-air to talk to me if you got information or want to be a part of civil rights activity to restore rights to poor and homeless people in Santa Cruz, which I've often talked about in the past, and I will be talking about again, and you'll hear some of that on this show. I work with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and appropriately enough, the number to call is 423-HUF, 423-4833, which is both a number for me and a number for HUF. And if you want to start working on some of the projects we've got going, we definitely need help. We're plotting a lawsuit to enjoin the police department and other authorities from arresting people for sleeping at night. I know that sounds kind of strange, perhaps to some new listeners, and what's wrong with sleeping at night? And then you mean sleeping in the middle of the street or on the sidewalk or on somebody's lawn. No, in Santa Cruz, the sleeping ban, as it's the sections of the camping ordinance that we're trying to change, is called. Sleeping ban is 6.36010A. It's a municipal code passed in 1978 by the Santa Cruz City Council at the behest of the Santa Cruz Police Department, which criminalizes the actual act of sleeping at night after 11 o'clock until 8:30 in the morning on any public property. There is no sanctuary. In fact, if the law were to be literally applied, it would apply to the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program. The Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program is the program that provides a pittance of spaces. It provides space for 40 people tonight and is so continuously full that the city attorney has a policy that if, it's actually not the city attorney, it's the referee Kim Baskett in the basement of the county building, and perhaps Department One's Deneen Guy, the prosecutor turned judge who came up from Monterey County, who took over Kangaroo Kelly's judicial seat in Department One. Craig Canada's case is coming up in Department 1, but what Janine Guy told Canada is that she understands that if you bring a note from the Homeless Service Center stating that the shelters are full, which they give out regularly without even looking at the roster to see if it's full, because it's always full. There's 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people, and there's less than 40 of them from April 15th to about November 15th. When the armory opens, and that adds another 75, maybe 100 if you cram them in. And so it's obvious that for most people, it's illegal to sleep at night in Santa Cruz, and that results in about 50 tickets a month if we look at the last year's average monthly ticketing. Some people are more enthusiastic than others in giving out these tickets. Ranger John Wallace, who for his enthusiasm, or perhaps his good looks, or maybe his deep voice, who knows what, has been promoted to Chief Ranger and has had three subordinates appointed, plus four CSOs and a cop. CSOs are police, but also I guess there's a Officer Seeley, the so-called Homeless Resources Officer, or Smirking Seeley, as I've dubbed him, which doesn't seem entirely fair, though he still has that kind of fixed smile on his face when you look at him. It's true. You got to work on that one, Eric. And he doesn't provide resources. He provides enforcement opportunities for people to get rid of homeless people and kind of masquerades as a homeless resource officer. That's my view. I've heard the occasional helpful story, but generally recently I've heard and seen the opposite. I've seen him harassing an individual for smoking marijuana off to the side where it was bothering nobody, but apparently some busybody either complained or he just was doing a little bike through, and it was the back area near the McPherson Center. This was about a month and a half ago. And there's been a rash of these marijuana crackdowns in spite of the passage of Measure K, the city measure that said marijuana enforcement for any kind of recreational marijuana that is done in private by consenting adults indoors, I don't even know if it's indoors, but it's on private property, should be the lowest priority, and more important, that the police department should have to justify and document each of their marijuana tickets. I mean, we know, for example, the Bami Swami, as I call him in a jovial way, that's the fellow who has a blanket outside Calapones and the coffee roasting company on Pacific Avenue. He recently got cited, not for blowing marijuana smoke in the face of children walking up and down Pacific Avenue, but when he discreetly went to medicate off to the side. He was with someone who had a medical marijuana card, but they took this stuff anyway. They took his pipe, and they gave him a citation, which I should advise you. If you get a citation for marijuana, my understanding, and I want to recheck this, but someone should correct me if I'm wrong, is this is a misdemeanor. That means you have a right to a jury trial and a public defender, unlike, let's say, oh, I don't know, biking the wrong way on Pacific Avenue, or sleeping at night after 11 o'clock at night, falling asleep, let's say, or covering up with blankets after 11 o'clock at night. That's called the blanket ban. It's part of the camping ordinance, again, passed by the city way back in 1978 at the behest of the police department. These are infractions which you cannot get a public defender for, that is, you can't get an attorney defending you, and you can't get a jury trial, so you have to rely on the tender mercies of a judge or a referee, which is usually a pretty foregone conclusion. You're going to be convicted unless you've gone, trekked over to the homeless service center, found somebody in, gotten a piece of paper saying that indeed there was no shelter that night, walked back to the court again, waited in line, stayed for the court procedure. All this, of course, because you were foolish enough to think that as a human being, you had a right to sleep legally somewhere at night, even, you know, maybe off in the bushes, maybe in your car, legally parked, but, you know, in your vehicle. These are all illegal activities in Santa Cruz, and we're trying to change these, as I mentioned before, by filing a lawsuit. The lawsuit would be similar to lawsuits filed in Los Angeles and San Diego that have been successful. And I've talked about the Los Angeles Jones decision at different points, and I kind of mention it regularly on the air. It's a decision in April that said you can't, it enjoined the police department down there, and that's a pretty nasty police department, from arresting homeless people for sitting, sleeping, or lying within the Skid Row area, which is, I think, like a 50-block square area of downtown Los Angeles. And San Diego, I think, got a citywide, that would be at night, by the way, between, I think it's 9 and 6:30 or 9:30 and 6, something like that. But certainly between 10 and 5:30, no question. They can't arrest you or ticket you. Now, of course, the L.A. police have responded with nasty tickets on other matters and declared a drug war and harassed people for do the kind of ID checks up and down the street that Santa Cruz is also beginning to do. So the homeless are nowhere out of the woods down in Los Angeles with this Jones decision as far as general respect for their civil rights. No question, that's not happening, or their civil liberties. But the act of arresting someone simply for sleeping is unconstitutional violation of the Eighth Amendment, according to two out of three, one dissented, in the Jones decision. That was April 2006. And the L.A. City Council raged and ranted that wasn't any good. But the city attorney in L.A., unlike our city attorney, John Barrasone, said, well, you know, that's the court's decision. We're going to be facing penalties unless we follow it. And so he has been following it. And San Diego, which had another lawsuit by a similar group of people, I actually have some of the papers here with me. It's actually called the Spencer versus City of San Diego lawsuit. It includes plaintiffs Greg Spencer, Randall French, Margaret Armstrong, Jimmy Ward, Jeffrey Miles, Sylvia Lievanos, Juan Alejo, Stephen Greer, and Robert Ibarra. They sued the City of San Diego, the City of San Diego Police Department, and Chief of Police William Lansdowne in his official capacity. I'm going to read this because it's kind of it's going to give you a clue as to what we're going to be doing in Santa Cruz. We are looking for plaintiffs, and on Sunday, 3 days hence, in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, or the BS Santa Cruz, as I sometimes call it, not because it isn't a nice bookstore, I wouldn't know, I've been banned from there since 1994, but it is the lair, I should say, it is co-owned or slightly managed or worked in, it's a little hard to tell because the story shifts, but Ryan and Neil Coonerty are certainly operators of that bookstore and probably co-owners, And Ryan Coonerty is often working there. And since he has refused to review the Jones decision and refused to give a reasonable explanation of why it is that since in Los Angeles and San Diego people are allowed to sleep and it's been declared cruel and unusual punishment to arrest them, but here in Santa Cruz somehow we're different, because he can't give a coherent explanation, and he's the vice mayor, and he also claims to be a constitutional law professor, both up at UC and at Cabrillo. Professor may be the wrong word, but he gives courses in both those places, which can be audited, by the way. He said you're welcome to come in and audit, so go audit those courses. Check them out at UCSC. They're happening this summer. I actually interviewed some of the students from the course last year. Coonerty is a strange civil liberties guy or constitutional civil liberties expert in that he may be big on civil liberties for people in Guantanamo, and good for him for being that way, but you don't hear him talking much about the local jails, about the mask they put on people for drunkenness, about tasering that goes on here, about the abuses against homeless people downtown and the selective enforcement that is a regular part of the downtown ordinances that make it illegal to sit in most places downtown and give the police wide discretion to go after individuals. You don't hear him expressing concerns about the ordinance I'm talking about, the sleeping ban ordinance, which his city council is responsible for. I mean, they didn't start it, but they have the power to change it. And because they do and because they aren't doing that, they aren't making those changes, they bear the responsibility for turning people into criminals and the damages that that creates. When you tell people they can't sleep at night between 11 and 8:30, what are you doing? Telling them to become meth freaks and wander around all night, slap themselves awake? No, you're telling them to leave town, of course. You're telling them, we don't want your kind here unless you have the money to rent at an exorbitant rate or to buy your own property. Maybe you should just sort of be born into the right family. It's a pretty outrageous situation. And for those who say, well, they should go to a poorer area, I would point out to you that in Fresno, a poorer area, they're doing the same thing. Homeless people are not wanted. It is a form of denial, a cruel, ultimately pointless, in a way it's not pointless, I guess, the idea is to enslave the lower class, put them to work, and if that doesn't work, drive them away. I guess you can send them to Iraq to do guard duty, and they can get paid wages there. But better still, hire cheaper people in third world countries. Anyway, we're working on a lawsuit in Santa Cruz that will replicate what the San Diego lawsuit, which I'm about to read, has done already. There was a settlement after San Diego city attorney quickly stopped arresting people after this Jones decision came out in Los Angeles last year, and then there was a formal settlement in April that essentially awarded a chunk of money to the homeless people and an injunction. I don't know how much money, but they did get this injunction, which said, cops, don't arrest them at night. Here's what the lawsuit read. And I haven't got the settlement here, so I'm hoping they'll have that in the future, but this is what they were asking for, or this is how they argued their case. The city of San Diego issues, prosecutes, and punishes misdemeanor criminal citations for sleeping in public to hundreds of people who have nowhere else to sleep. Now, Santa Cruz does the same, but it's an infraction, but still, it often results in jail because people don't make it to court, or they don't go to do their community service if they can't pay their fine, because people have to sleep. They just have to sleep. And that is the nub of the Jones decision, that it's an involuntary activity. When you criminalize an involuntary activity, you don't have to wait for a court hearing to say, see, I had to do it because I had nowhere else to go. No. If it is well known that there's nowhere else to go, and the police are still, as they are in Santa Cruz, under Ranger Wallace, under Chief Scary, under Steve Hammack, Superintendent of Parks and Rec, still arresting people, still harassing people, for something that they have no choice but to do, to sleep at night, then that is itself cruel and unusual punishment, violates the Eighth Amendment. If they are additionally, as Ranger Wallace is doing, as supported by Steve Hammack, as supported by Steve's boss, Danette Shoemaker, head of the Parks and Rec Department, destroying their property in camps throughout the Poganip, then this is something that it's been shown in Fresno, at least a judge has ruled there, and again, it's not binding here, but it certainly might send a, you know, a wake-up call to some of these folks, some of these bureaucrats who somehow think they can just sort of smile and give little reports at city council meeting and ruin the lives and destroy the property of poor people, you know, with not so much as a buy or leave. The Kincaid decision in Fresno has said you can't destroy property of Fresno homeless people. You got to store it. You got to store it and give them an opportunity to reclaim it. Well, that's not what Ranger Wallace does. That's not what Danette Shoemaker has directed Steve Hammack to do, or Steve Hammack has directed Ranger Wallace to do. Ranger Wallace was quite candid with us. He said, you know, we don't, it's too much trouble to store stuff. And so much, too much of it is junk. And there's hypodermic needles. And it's all trash. Well, we've had reports from people repeatedly over the last, I've heard reports over the last few years of what these rangers do. What Ranger Wallace does and what his the crews he sends in from Labor Ready do is they come up to a campsite and they just slash the tents, put all the stuff together in a big heap, and then cart it out and compact it or dumpsterize it. That can destroy, of course, valuable ID. It can destroy valuable property, priceless possessions. It can destroy all kinds of stuff. And the Fresno homeless are currently going to trial now, having already gotten essentially a temporary restraining order and then a preliminary injunction. They will be going to trial to see how much money they will be recovering because of the abuses of the Fresno Police Department and associated agencies. Well, it's happening in Santa Cruz, too. While the liberals chatter on and the students go to the university and I do my little radio show and you do whatever you're doing, that's happening tonight and tomorrow night and the next night. And 50 citations are going out every month for sleeping. And a lot, probably three or four times that number, I don't know how many actually, could be less, could be more, are people are told to move on, even though they're not told where to move to. And they're harassed. People, Donna Dice, previously the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz, has called me and has told me that, I may be playing this later actually on the show, that police officers are jumping up and down on her vehicle, banging on the doors of her vehicle. I think it's banging on the doors, not jumping up and down, though she reports, I think others have said that they're getting the, you know, the rock-a-bye baby treatment from police officers. People like Lieutenant Habey, who Joe Habey, a retired police officer, used to do this regularly a couple years ago, and apparently Officer Perry, back from a training death squads in Iraq, training police in Iraq, is now, you know, back at his old tricks harassing homeless people. And that is too bad. But let me read from the San Diego's lawsuit, Spencer versus City of San Diego, Spencer and others versus the city. The City of San Diego issues, prosecutes, and punishes misdemeanor criminal citations for sleeping in public to hundreds of people who have nowhere else to sleep. These citations, issued pursuant to Penal Code 647J, which is a penal code, state penal code, have resulted and are resulting in severe punishments to these people, including fines they can't hope to pay, extended jail stays, compelled public work service, and probation situations in which another violation of the law, however technical, results in additional monetary and freedom-depriving punishments, some for as long as 3 years. They are a cruel violation of the U.S. and California constitutions and present the homeless with a true Hobson's choice. Don't sleep in public or don't sleep at all. Sleep is a necessity, not a choice, and people are becoming, quote, criminals merely for sleeping. Unless the city designates an alternative safe zone where homeless people can sleep without fear of an illegal lodging citation, its police force should not be allowed to issue the citations that lead to prosecution, conviction, fines, and incarceration. And I've got to tell you that Bob Lee also issues citations. I should say the Sheriff's Department under Sheriff Robbins has issued citations under this same law, 647J. It's the illegal lodging law. And Jesus Santos, we had a long interview with him some months ago. If you look for 647J, in the archives of these shows, you can go back and actually hear his struggles in court on that one. I think he eventually gave up and did a deal. But this is a kind of vicious attack on poor people that is kind of routine and regular. And it's not just done by the Santa Cruz Police Department and by the city attorney. It's also done by the district attorney. And indeed, when it's done by the district attorney, it's done as a misdemeanor. And as a misdemeanor, it's even harsher. But at least as a misdemeanor, you get a public defender. Not that that often helps a hell of a lot. But if there were enough people who were demanding public defenders, as we, as was the case, for example, in Berkeley under the earlier nudity law when it was a misdemeanor, they stop enforcing it because, firstly, you know, it's costly, and also because juries don't want to convict. You're going to convict somebody for sleeping at night? I mean, come on. When they have no legal place to go? No way. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. The contrasts of life as perceived by people in different stations of society are as vivid today as when Charles Dickens penned these words nearly 150 years ago. Order, we believe, is better than chaos. Predictability is more comfortable than the unknown. In a society that prizes beauty, youth, vigor, and success that is measured by accumulation of precious things, the disheveled, the aged, the weary, those whose accumulated wealth is carried in a tattered blanket, present themselves in some quarters as a distraction to a desired representation of how the best of times should appear. They are extremely bright. They suffer from mental illnesses. They are capable of causing physical injury or death. Their gentleness permits them to share their meager subsistence with birds that find a safe harbor at their feet. In making their claim to the American dream, they participate in publicly sponsored, government-supported celebrations from distant bridges rather than penthouses, knowing that their rights, that Thomas Jefferson proclaimed inviolate, being life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, are no less guaranteed to them than to those not so vulnerable, because they carry evidence of their station in life in their wallets rather than in a bag or worn blanket. The homeless present many diverse faces. That's what all that rhetoric is about. Gaining a better understanding of the daily life issues they face is necessary to judge whether relief is indicated in this case, considering at the same time the requirements law enforcement officials face in performing their lawful duties. This is an action for injunctive and declaratory relief under 42 UCUSC paragraph 1983 and a number of other CCP codes, asking the court to order the city of San Diego to stop issuing illegal lodging citations under color of Penal Code 647J to homeless people who sleep in public unless and until it designates an alternative sleep area. Plaintiffs bring this action against the defendants, the police chief, and the city, on their own behalf and on behalf of all persons similarly situated. The class of people that plaintiffs represents consists of all those persons in the city of San Diego who are homeless and have no place to sleep other than in public, who face the prospect of receiving an illegal lodging ticket and subsequent conviction, fine, or imprisonment, and those who are homeless and have no place to sleep and have already been issued one or more citations for illegal lodging and have received convictions and punishments, including fines, probations, forced community service, and imprisonments. This class is comprised of approximately 4,500 individuals who are homeless and living in the city of San Diego, have nowhere to sleep other than in public, and are thus committing a crime every time they fall asleep, and who therefore have received an illegal lodging citation for per 647J, and who face the prospect of arrest, citation, trial, conviction, and punishment. Joining all these individuals in this lawsuit is impractical and unnecessary, but the disposition of their claims in a class action will benefit the parties. There's a well-defined community of interest in the questions of law and fact. This gets a little legalistic. Let's skip ahead here. Plaintiff Greg Spencer is a resident of San Diego, California. He is a homeless individual, as the term is defined in the Stuart B. McKinney Homeless Assistance Act, inasmuch as he lacks a fixed, regular, and adequate nighttime residence. On October 11, 2004, and November 9, 2004, the defendants cited him pursuant to Penal Code 647, that's the police, for illegal lodging in the area of 1200 K Street in San Diego, and he has been convicted of the crime of illegal lodging pursuant to such citations and others. On account of these citations and convictions, Mr. Spencer has been sentenced and punished, which sentence and punishment included a $100 fine, 2 days incarceration in the county jail, and the threat of additional incarceration suspended pending completion, successful completion of 3 years probation. He was honorably discharged from the Navy in 1989. On the dates he received these citations, he had nowhere to sleep but in public, inasmuch as local homeless shelters were reported full. And we have another individual, Randall French, who similarly got ticketed about a month later. He was honorably discharged from the Marines in 1993. Plaintiff Margaret Armstrong had nowhere to sleep but in a public place, and again got the same suspended sentence requiring 3 years probation of not sleeping, because it's illegal to sleep at night. Plaintiff Jimmy Ward was on the waiting list at St. Vincent de Paul's, but the homeless shelters were full. Jeffrey Miles, discharged from the Navy in 1989, nowhere to sleep and in public. Homeless shelters were full. Plaintiff Sylvia Liovanos, similarly, homeless shelters full. Plaintiff Juan Alejo, homeless shelters full. And, of course, the Santa Cruz homeless shelters are always full, at least always during the fall, spring, and summer. So, if you want to help out with this lawsuit, well, come on down to the demonstration we're going to be having on Sunday in front of Ryan Coonerty's bookshop, where apparently they sell books, but homeless people, and actually, let me give full credit to the Bookshop Santa Cruz, even though I'm not allowed in there. The Bookshop Santa Cruz operates one of the few fairly public bathrooms in town. I mean, except for those people who are excluded, like myself, anybody can go in there to the bathroom. And that's during operating hours, that's a significant thing. Other places, like Lulu Carpenter's, will run you off with a sharp stick, even if you're a customer on occasion, as Craig Canada found out a couple weeks ago. And there's a big thread on that issue, if you're interested in reading about it, on the Santa Cruz Sentinel Forum website, or the Santa Cruz Sentinel Forum. Go on there and you can read how that went down. But Bookshop Santa Cruz does provide a bathroom, and it also has been gentle to people sleeping nearby, I've been told. On the other hand, Coonerty is the main force as vice mayor and city council member, that's Ryan Coonerty, behind anti-homeless laws that criminalize taking shelter in a parking garage at night, or actually any time, day or night, unless you have a bike or car parked there. That's the famous parking garage paranoia law that he pushed last year and passed. Similarly, Coonerty voted for the law that made it criminal for a person to walk into parking lot number 9 without a car or bicycle. And even if you have a car or bicycle, you can't go into the number 9 or the garages for more than 15 minutes. So don't fall asleep in your car, even during the day, because you'll get a ticket for doing that. Not for sleeping, mind you, during the day. It's legal to sleep during the day, we are reminded. But it is illegal to be in a parking lot number 9 or in a garage for more than 15 minutes. Because, see, you might be contemplating a crime, and that's something they want to stop. A brilliant scheme hatched by parking lot attendants in the Public Works Department and championed by such people as Jerry Mandel and others of the Downtown Commission, to their discredit. And particularly discredited are, of course, Rotkin, Matthews, Riley, and others on the City Council who voted for this crap last year. I, of course, ignore these ordinances, this particular ordinance anyway. I would like nothing more than to be cited. They're supposed to have so-called free speech guidelines in public, even in the parking garages and lot number 9, but they're so concerned about free speech that they've never issued those guidelines. I continue to ask the head of the parking authority, who's, I guess, currently it's Jim Burns, or I think he shares it with two other people now that Matt Farrell has retired, and I get assurances that the matter will be looked into, and then nothing back. Well, let's hear some of that interview or two. Again, this was kind of a pitch, and to remind you, 2 o'clock in front of Bookshop Santa Cruz, come on down. We're going to be, maybe we'll have some, who knows, maybe some refreshments. But certainly we're going to be having a petition for you to sign, and we'll be looking for people who've gotten sleeping tickets, and we'll be trying to encourage Vice Mayor Coonerty to come out and explain just what the heck is going on with the city that they make it illegal for homeless people to sleep. We're not looking for them to sleep anywhere and everywhere, but there has to be a legal place somewhere, right? And I know that's a touchy issue, too. What do you want, a concentration camp where all the homeless people are going to be? No, I don't. But I'm saying that and even until there is such a point, the idea of arresting people is triply outrageous. And I encourage you, if you're in the community, to support us. If you can't come down and help on Sunday at 2 o'clock in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, downtown on Pacific Avenue, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and say, what else can I do? We need people to go into court and keep an eye on the judges who are a part of this whole nasty machine. We need people who want to write letters to the Sentinel. We want people who are good artists who can design flyers and bumper stickers and such. We want people who are interested in speaking before city council or doing some tabling. We got lots of things for you to do. You don't have to come to a meeting. Just call up and volunteer. 423-4833, and we'll take it from there.
Well, it's evening, about 20 to 10 on the 27th of June, talking with
Randy Reyes.
And Randy, we're here on the corner of Cathcart and Pacific, sitting on one of the sparse benches downtown. And you say you, any reports from the street? I guess you were talking about the vets hall, but that's sort of, is this a new report, or is this sort of a historical survey?
No, actually, I was appointed sergeant-at-arms by Richard Anderson, who is the president, or was the president of the American Veterans Council, and Roger, who was also a vet, who has gone to like five universities to study law. We orchestrated this maneuver, and that maneuver was that when the veterans in this town were making a nuisance out of themselves and claiming to be vets, and we were trying to gain the recognition and the respect of the community because the Veterans Hall, the Veterans Administration, was trying to go forward and do things for the veterans in this town. And I'm the founder of the lockers for those veterans who needed a place to store their stuff. And Roger actually invested money out of his own pocket. I think it was $100 for some lockers for the veterans. Anyway, our maneuver was that when the veterans were out of line in the community, I would put them in check as sergeant-at-arms, unofficially military police, and I would give them three warnings, three write-ups, basically. And after three write-ups, then we would take the paperwork over to the judge and ask for a restraining order where they could not come within the veterans hall within 100 yards.
How often did you do this?
For a whole year, and I cleaned house.
No, but how often did a restraining order get issued?
Okay. I never had to write anybody up.
Great.
And I went through a lot of drama, a lot of turmoil.
I spoke to them instead.
Exactly. Word of mouth, yes. And I was the right person for the job, being that I'm not a coward. Marine Corps, honorable discharge. It's the only thing I've ever done right in my life. I'm a high school dropout, but they did accept me back in 1979. So,
by the way, I've just seen Jarhead, the movie. What did you think of it?
Have
you seen it?
I haven't seen it.
Let me know if you ever see it.
Yeah.
So I understand, though, that there have been restraining orders issued for a couple of people in the last year at the behest of perhaps Tim Bratton.
Tim, I had talked to Tim, and Tim apparently had done a few things that was inappropriate and against the law, but I'm not sure about that. I don't like to assume or accuse anybody of anything that I don't know for sure about. And, you know, Tim, he has potential. He's a good guy. He's gave me a lot of information. As far as me judging him or coming against him, I can't speak on that because I have a lot of errors in my own life.
So what is your current? Are you currently still sergeant at arms or
officially? Yes, yes I am, and I'm back in the ball game. And Roger, who is very very knowledgeable, and you know when it comes to the legal matters. Yes, I'm a little dehydrated. I've been riding my bike a lot, so I need to drink some water. You know, he told me tonight that I'm still in the ball game, even though I was fired by Richard Anderson, who is the president of the American Veterans Council.
Why did he fire you?
It was a breach of contract. Now, what happened was he allowed me to borrow $50 out of his pocket, which I believe was part of a fund that was given to him for the Veterans Hall. He was appointed president, and what happened when I got to work, to do the painting job that he hired me to do, he changed up on me and he wanted me to pull weeds. Well, at that time, I hesitated to do it, but I didn't refuse it. I went outside to talk to another person who they call Hot Rod, who was pushing his cart around, who spreads a lot of his stuff out there by the clock tower. And I was outside talking to Hot Rod because...
About 6 months or a year ago, right?
About 2 years ago, yes.
2 years ago.
Yes, and...
I haven't seen Hot Rod in over about a year.
About 2 years, yeah. And when I was outside talking to Hot Rod because he was confused and he needed some assistance and help, and being that I was Sergeant at Arms at the time, I told him, I will try to help you. So I put aside the job temporarily. It would only took a half an hour to help him move his stuff somewhere and hide it. And Richard came outside, Richard Anderson, the president of the American Veterans Council, and he said, what are you doing? And I told him I was trying to help Hot Rod. He says, you know what? He said, this is exactly how he said it. He said, fuck you. You stole $50 from me. Don't ever come back to the vets hall again.
He wasn't too sympathetic with your attempting to help Hot Rod.
No, not at all. And Hot Rod is a veteran. And that was my job. My job is, as Sergeant-at-Arms, you know, that's why I was Sergeant-at-Arms.
So has this matter been cleared up, or are you still under a cloud?
I got fired from the job, and I was accused of being a thief. So I went to a meeting when Richard was there, and he told me, he got up and told me during the meeting that I told you that I'm not allowed in the Veterans Hall anymore, but that's, he can't do that legally. He's not allowed to do that. Now, Roger had told me that I could probably sue him for $5,000.
Have you been able to go back to the Veterans Hall?
Yes. I actually, 2 weeks ago, Larry, I can't think of his last name. You know Larry.
I know Larry.
Yeah. Larry had appointed me to take charge and run the Veterans Hall while he was gone. I cleaned it up. I even had somebody help me. And I locked the place up, and it was an honor to still be able to be a participant in that.
Cool. Now, Richard Anderson's still around? Or?
I'm not sure. I haven't seen him myself. I think if he was... Well, if he was...
Getting older.
If he was coming back around the Vets Hall... he would have made a big stink about me being there. And it was a breach of contract is all it was. He told me, he stated that I stole $50 from him, you know, stay away from the vets hall, and that was illegal. And then I came back another time, and he actually called the police and had me escorted out of the building during another
meeting. Now you're okay as far as going into the vets hall?
Yes.
Do you feel confident about that, or do you still feel you're a little on shaky ground?
No, no.
You feel okay about
this? No, I'm...
So if you want to go in there, you walk in there.
Oh, I could walk in there.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't feel deterred. Because I know, for example, that there's some places in town that, yeah, I feel uncomfortable going in. There are other places that I don't go in because they told me if I walk in there, they'll have me arrested. So, Bookshop Santa Cruz, for instance. So, you know...
Like at the city council.
The city council...
I heard about that.
Right, although...
And actually, for those of you who are... threatened with arrest for going into a place. There are some places that, you know, it's appropriate if you go into, even if you're threatened with arrest. So, for instance, if it's a public agency. So, for instance, the hosts told me, you have to leave here or you're going to be arrested. I said, well, fine. Hosts are a public corporation. That's the group that walks up and down the mall with their little purple shirts on, kind of the eyes and ears of the police, official snitches. Their office is public. Similarly, city council is public. They tell you to leave city council. Well, I have a lawsuit pending on that whole issue, which has been going on for 5 years. But, you know, I'm usually, my response is not to leave. Of course, you have to be prepared for a false arrest, which means you should have your affairs in order and, you know, not have your car running and all that sort of thing. On the other hand, in private property, it's a little different. You know, it's the rights of people in private property are stronger to be exclusionary, although there is a thing called the UNRRA Civil Rights Act, which says they can't discriminate against a class of people. Now, the problem with that law is it hasn't been effectively used in Santa Cruz that I've heard of, even though I know some people have talked about it. And one of those people is Jerry Henry. Jerry Henry is the street preacher you may have heard tell of on this show. We played interviews about him. We played him. We played his caretakers. He's out at the Rancho Del Mar Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center in Aptos, and he's been horrifically arrested and held on a $100,000 bail, essentially for peacefully but loudly protesting his exclusion from some of the businesses there because they don't like him. And he essentially, as I've heard, and this is secondhand information, and I got it from Richard Quigley, and so it's probably reliable, but I don't I may not be communicating it as accurately as I should. He has won his appeal. I guess Art Dudley, a local attorney, has taken his case to the California Supreme Court, and it's gotten to federal court now, and the federal courts have ruled that they have to stop prosecuting him, they have to stop harassing him, they have to stop putting these bogus probation conditions on him and say he can't be within 100 feet of the, or however many feet it is, of the Aptos Coffee Roasting Company. And like that. Let's get on with this and see what more while I take this call. But
they had you arrested because you spoke your piece.
Right.
And they didn't want to tolerate it.
No, they didn't like that.
No. No, you were probably exposing too much information that was going to discredit them.
Well, I was, it's generous of you to say that. I wish I had that kind of information because they need discrediting. But anyway, we've been talking with
Randy Reyes, and I'm very knowledgeable in the fact that, you know, the ones who are in control keep the people blind so they can stay in power.
I hear you. Thank you, Randy.
You're welcome.
It's the same old story. We're approaching the residue of the SAFE event this evening. We have Musical Mike, who has Free Flowers information here at the Alfresco booth. I think this 178th, perhaps 178th week. We're not sure if it went on last week here in front of the New Leaf Market. But it looks like Mike is holding down the fort alone here. Surrounded, admittedly, by several backpacks, bicycles, his own guitar, of course, is in his arms, and my goodness. Well, it looks like slim pickings here at the SAFE event, but let's ask him what's happening. Hey there, Meriwether Mike. What's happening now? Are you the solo musician here?
Well, we've had a few guest stars all along. We had a pretty good SAFE night tonight. Guest star was Jay.
Uh-huh.
He dropped in for a set, and Dennis did a few folk songs. And yeah, well, you know, it was a pretty good night. Off and on,
we like a bag of chips over there, perhaps.
Yeah, I had a few donations. We split a cake. Somebody brought a cake and a bag of chips. And
any interesting encounters with the police?
I didn't have any of the local yokels drop by. It was pretty
mellow.
Pretty mellow there. Mellow Mike. Yeah.
All right.
Gregory came by before saying he was on his way to school. He thought he might come by after school, but doesn't look like he's going to show. It's getting kind of late. I was going to try to hold it down for him, but it's like we'll have to close it without him.
Well, grinning Greg, maybe next week. I know he's been taking to the educational enterprise, so he's out at Cabrillo.
Him and Corley doing Wally's Swing World voice class. So.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, we'll look in on that one probably never, but we'll get the update on it. Thank you there, Meriwether Mike.
Okay. Thanks, Robert.
All right, we're here in front of Borders talking with
Miguel De Leon
and
Anna Banana.
So Anna and Miguel, and of course anybody else who wishes to chime in. You say that it's been mellow tonight, but yesterday there was a frequent cops circling.
Yeah, these cops around here like sharks, you know what I'm saying? Sharks, they circle around and they bite you.
So have you been bitten lately?
No, I think I just did last jail time for getting tickets out here.
What kind of tickets did you get, and what kind of jail did you serve?
I've done 8 days, like 5 times for small tickets, like sitting on the sidewalk or sitting in the doorways when I'm drumming. You know, basically, I'm at hard working, and they throw me tickets, so I got to do jail time for it.
So, 4 tickets. How many tickets have given you 8 days of jail time last time? How many actual citations did you have outstanding?
None last time. I just missed court, so they
you missed a failure to appear.
You were there that day when you was getting arrested.
Oh, was that really? Remind me of that some time ago or a week or two ago.
Hey, Mike.
It was right across the street over there. They were taking him to jail for missing that class.
Right, right. I remember that. You're pointing at Cookie Company. It was on a Friday. What about you? How have you been doing?
All right. I just got out tonight. I mean, out and about tonight.
You're at liberty, but you just got out on the streets.
No. I just, like, woke up.
You haven't been in jail recently.
Yeah, I haven't been in jail recently. Expecting those so soon, I got a couple of tickets catching up with my buddy.
And what criminal behavior have you been engaging in?
There's no trouble to get into. I don't know, man.
What kind of tickets are outstanding? Anna Banana.
Oh, I got my first marijuana possession charge on 419.
And who gave you that citation?
Some pig.
You don't know the name of the officer?
No, it wasn't a citation. It was a ticket. I don't remember the name.
Yeah, that's a citation.
Oh.
Same
citation?
Thing.
Oh.
Your citation is actually both.
I thought citations where they were. They
just,
I'm giving you a warning here.
No, citations are usually a ticket, but it can be, you know, can be a badge of merit, actually.
Saying, yeah, you know, that I had to sign and shit.
So you don't recall the officer? Because I know we've been getting reports of marijuana tickets. You don't have a medical marijuana card, of course, right? I
can't afford one.
Do you have any kind of condition,
know,
or you
I don't
do?
Know how to go through. I have very bad feminine cramps every
right.
month. And
you use marijuana to reduce that.
And it helps. It helps me think a lot clearer sometimes. Most people would say it wouldn't, but like it calms me down a little bit to where I could think a little bit clearer sometimes, to where I'm not just like tripping out and stuff.
Now, are you on the streets or are you indoors? What's your situation?
In my vehicle, me and him.
And are the two of you being left alone by police as far as camping goes or not?
Not usually. Right now we're in a lucky spot till we get our motorhome fixed and back on the road, though.
Okay. How long you guys have been vehicle-ish in Santa Cruz?
About
a year. And during that time, how many camping tickets have you gotten?
Too friggin' many. More parking tickets. Just bullshit parking tickets.
And those were a few interviews. My tapes are a little disorganized this evening, so I'm sorry we haven't got a choicer selection. And indeed, in about 10 minutes, we should be having a live studio guest, Jillian Greensight, in the studio chatting with us about, again, we're going to attempt to deconstruct the city council in detail and talk about not just what can be done on this issue, but what the problems are with city council calls itself progressive, but actually is nothing but, or anything but, I should say, and then is able to present this illusion, and what could be done to change that, and why we're faced with that here, and how that whole mechanism operates. Perhaps we can get some, you know, some. I'm hoping to get some perspective from Jillian, who's been around here for more than 20 years, longer than I have, on a continuous basis. She's a real old timer, and although her prime specialty is environmental issues and women's safety and rape and sexual assault, she knows a lot of other stuff too. And hopefully, we can mine her on those issues. Looking over other stuff, I wanted to bring up. I guess I have another report on the whole issue of the Public Records Act brouhaha at the county building. For those of you who have or have been following it, for those of you who haven't, I could summarize it. We're around the sleeping ban lawsuit that I talked about earlier. We have been trying to get a clear set of records indicating what's happened with every sleeping ban ticket in a six-month period that came before the courts. In other words, what kind of punishment did a person get? Did they get additional fines because they failed to appear? How much did it cost them to go to community service? Were they afforded a trial before a judge? Did the officers show up? What actually happened? I'm also interested in whether they were advised of their rights and so forth. That won't appear on the court record, but all the rest of that stuff will. And, of course, trying to get this has been very difficult. You can find the whole grim story by going online to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz and going to the story, Not So Public Records, written by Thomas Levitt and with a lot of kind of photographic frills. You can kind of see the whole scene down there in the basement of the county building. I mean, usually what you do when you want a record in this court system that is an infraction record. Well, if you want a misdemeanor or a felony file, if you want to look at somebody's file, you're a member of the public, it doesn't have to be your file or your mother's file, you don't have to get a special clearance. Criminal cases that are pending and that are passed are public record, unless the records have been sealed for some reason. And so you go in to the misdemeanor court or the misdemeanor clerks on the main floor of the county building, and you go up to the window and you say, "Hi, I'd like the record is the file of such and such in this case that happened at such a time with such and such a charge." And they'll look it up on the computer, and then they'll send to the back for the file, unless it's in deep storage, like 10 years old or something, in which case, who knows, maybe they've destroyed the records. But they'll bring you the paper file. And then sometimes they'll ask you for your ID, if you want to go in there and view it, and you get to go in there and view it. If you want to make copies, there's an exorbitant charge of 50 cents a page, but you get to view it, and you can take notes from it. And I have, for example, in the Roger Mensch case, the guy who's the DA has been going after for selling medical marijuana to people with medical marijuana cards, the DA's been going after that guy, and we've talked about how that's absurd and a violation of the what the electorate has voted in Proposition 215, SB 420, and most importantly, of the political will and the community consensus here in Santa Cruz. You don't go after people for medical marijuana who are selling it to medical marijuana patients if you're a dispensary. But that doesn't – anyway, I got details of that by going into the records. And if you want to get the records of the sleeping ban cases, it should be relatively simple, the same thing. Well, it's not. Because downstairs, they have a different system. What they do instead downstairs is, in the past, they would just print out the record you wanted. But because we wanted a lot of records, 300 of them or so, they were going to charge us $3,000 to $6,000 to print this out. And they claimed it would be $15 per record, which, of course, is absurd. They don't have a right to charge you anything to look at a public record. It's a public record. But their claim was, well, we have a difficult computer system, and we have to print it out to look at it because we can't let you look at the computer. And my retort to that is, well, that's unfortunate, but you are required to show us the records. And if it's going to cost you to do it, that's too bad, but that's your problem, not the public's problem. If we ask you for a copy, well, then you can whip out some exorbitant charge. You shouldn't. You should charge 10 cents a page or less. And you should make an electronic copy available, since a lot of people use computers these days. But down in the basement of the county building, they refused to do either. And we found, as you'll read from this story, that they are continuing to stonewall us. And when we say, look, so you're not giving us these public records, instead of saying, no, we're not, they will call the deputies. And they've called them on three occasions, or at least on two, and they came on a third as well. And that's because of Tess Fitzgerald, the superintendent down there, a nice enough woman in many other respects, but someone who apparently is very diligent in enforcing illegal or unconstitutional law or orders from her superior, Alex Calvo, who's the court administrator. So we are still trying to get this done either by going, you might say, well, why don't you just do a Public Records Act request? They have to answer within 10 days and then, do a lawsuit if you need to. Well, Public Records Act doesn't apply to courts, but what does apply is the California rules of court, and they are supposed to do it. The question is finding a lawyer who's willing to take a motion into court to get the access to these records, which you would think would be relatively easy and probably would be if you had, the deepest pockets around. Instead, what we've been doing is simply trying to embarrass them into doing this by posting on the internet what the different kinds of excuses they come up with, playing tapes here on free radio, which you've heard, some of you who are regular listeners. And we went back again on Wednesday to try to get, actually Thomas Levitt went in and tried to get one record. He didn't ask for 300 records. He didn't ask for 10 records. He didn't ask for 5. He asked for one. And he was told he could not get that record unless he filled out a form. Although, and the form has different, I'm reaching into my bag here to get it now. She tried to take the form back from him, saying he couldn't take the form with him. Apparently she was a little nervous about showing the public this form, but he told her, look, it's a form, it's a public form, it's a public record, if you will. And she subsided. This is a woman at the basement of the county building who had told me that I could not tape record her, even though I was simply documenting the fact that she wasn't giving me a public record that I was asking for. And this was the best evidence that she was or wasn't doing that. And I kept telling her, look, it's not personal. I don't mean to be mean or offensive to you, but, we need this record. So anyway, Thomas went down there on Wednesday. We have our Wednesday Huff meetings. You can join in the general jamboree if you want to check it out on Wednesdays. He went down there to get a just one record from about one sleeping van ticket from last year, which would probably be a two-page printout, not very much in terms of what's required. And she handed him a form, said, I won't give it to you now, even though she had the capability for doing that immediately. All he has to do is look on the computer, print it out, and show it to him. Instead, she told him he'd have to wait a day and go upstairs and go into this locked room, show ID, and go through that process. And he'd additionally have to fill out this form, which included driver's license number, social security number, not yours, but of the person you're looking for. Now, she clarified that it was not mandatory to do this, but there were all these fields that was suggested you fill out. And it was also an indication that it might take over 10 minutes, and if it did, you'd have to pay $15. First, she wanted a check to that effect. Then she ended up essentially, I think, not taking his Public Records Act request. And this is, of course, this is not the problem of this African-American clerk down there who, you know, is quite polite and friendly on other occasions. The people are being put through this entire process by a contorted system, which is, it's hard to reach another conclusion that they don't want us to get sleeping ban information. Because maybe they feel guilty about the sleeping ban, or maybe it is because they want to keep charging people exorbitant amounts of money. We said, no, you can't charge people anything to look at these records. Or maybe it's because they feel like they're in positions of power and we're causing them grief and they don't want to succumb to that. So it's not entirely clear just what the heck is happening around this whole thing, but it isn't good, and we will be fighting it. And we hope you will too, because this affects not only people looking for sleeping ban records, it affects anybody who wants to go in and get a record. Because most people's crimes are not misdemeanors or felonies, they are infractions. They are lower crimes. They are, you know, going through a stop sign or getting a, you know, a ticket for, riding your bike the wrong way on Pacific Avenue or walking a dog on Pacific Avenue, which is illegal, even if you have it on a leash. So it's unrealistic, and it's something we have to fight. And if it's interesting that trying to simply be reasonable about these things usually results in lengthy correspondence, and you can find this correspondence posted under this story on IndieBay.org called It's regarding public access and how it just does not exist around this. But luckily, we are going to have access to another subject and another person. You get to hear somebody other than me babbling away here, because in the studio with me and shortly to be on mic after she's set herself up is Jillian Greensight, who's an activist in the community, co-founder of the Commission of Prevention of Violence Against Women, and probably a string of other things I've never heard about. Maybe we can get her to come clean on all her sinister terrorist activities. And while we're waiting for that, let's have a little music from street performer Downtown Dave, who actually, I haven't seen him lately, but he strums on the streets of Santa Cruz on Pacific Avenue.
Don't you know? Can't you see? This kind of loving will set you free, will set you free. Praise the Lord, praise the Lord. His love is gracious, His love is kind, His love is kind. Mountain meadow, lonely shoreline, crowded city, His love is kind, His love is kind. Don't you know, can't you see, His gifts are precious, Won't you agree? Won't you agree? I'm glad to be living. It's good to be free. This kind of loving's the way it should be. The way it should be. Praise the Lord. Praise the Lord. This kind of loving will set you free. Will set you free. Will set you free. Will set you free. First you say you love me, then you say goodbye. Now I'm on this mountain, somewhere way up high. And you are in the city, somewhere down below. Wish I could hold you, like to let you know just how much I love you and what you mean to me. Maybe I will see you somewhere by the sea.
That was Downtown Dave and two numbers. One of them is called, well, I'm going to have to wait on that one because it's actually on the CD itself. But that's Downtown Dave, one of our own musicians downtown. Now in the studio with me is Jillian Greensahe there. Jillian, welcome back.
Thank you,
again.
Robert.
I know we're going to kind of move along here. Well, you've been here twice before. We've talked about this report from 2006, which was revisited in 2007. About rape stats being four times the statewide average here in Santa Cruz as they are in California, and the failure of the police department to deal with this issue, and your sense that city council is, dare I say it, covering up or not holding the police department to standards it should, is Is that right?
Yes. Basically, I think we have an extremely serious situation in Santa Cruz, and that women are at high risk, and I think we've uncovered the problem, and it is being covered up. And I believe that it's going to take quite a bit to uncover it, but I'm sort of have to keep pursuing it because, to me, it's a matter of connecting the dots. It's quite simple. We have a very high rate of reported rape. The explanations given don't stand up to scrutiny. We also, at the same year that we started to have a high rate of reported rape, our arrest rate, cleared by arrest rate, plummeted in Santa Cruz. I did a look at seven other counties. And our best year, cleared by arrest means someone's arrested or they close the case because maybe somebody died, the suspect died, whatever's. But it's a measure of how well a police department is doing, in this case with respect to rape reports. Our best year of numbers of cases cleared by arrest is lower than the worst year of the seven other counties I looked into, including Los Angeles, San Diego, Santa Clara, San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, Riverside, etc. I bet if I kept looking, we possibly have the lowest cleared by arrest rate in the state of California. So I just ask people to connect the dots. High rate of rape, a lack of investigation or poor investigation by our police department, resulting in the lowest cleared by arrest rate. Connect the dots. It adds up. And I think that it's being made to look as though there are out-in-the-ozone explanations for this. The police...
The police have claimed that, you know, that there's a more reported rapes in Santa Cruz because we're such a highly conscious community.
Their explanation so far...
That they have a computer problem because...
No, they changed from pencil and paper to computer, which somehow magically made the numbers go up. I don't see the logic in that.
Computers are more efficient than pencil and paper, and therefore there were more rapes reported.
Well, as is captured in the your tone of voice, that doesn't measure up. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's been a lack of scrutiny of the police department, unwillingness on the part of city council to hold them accountable. And I'd go so far as to say that some council members have played a little bit of a shell game with this. Out of the six-month meeting that was called the Joint City Joint Committee on Sexual Assault, which was made up of three council members, Ryan Coonerty, Ed Porter, and Mike Rotkin.
Public Safety Committee.
Yeah. Out of this joint meeting that was those three plus the full commission was a set of recommendations. The first one was that the police department prioritise training in investigative techniques. That magically disappeared when Councilmember Rotkin had gone through the recommendations, sent it back to the recommendations were supposed to go to council last December, mm-hmm. and starting with that one. And by the time that Councilmember Rotkin had brought them back to the Public Safety Committee and then back to the commission, and that took 6 months. Meanwhile, we have a crisis on our hands. By the time they went to council, which is the tape that we've heard last week and we'll hear more of, hopefully, that had dropped. And that is the single, if you're connecting the dots, prioritizing investigative techniques is the missing link, is the key to raising the arrest rate and lowering the rate of rape in Santa Cruz. So that disappeared. And Councilmember Rotkin's explanation on the tape and at the council meeting was something along the lines of, well, some things weren't necessary anymore. So they slightly changed from 6 months ago. That's not accurate.
Again, what is that explanation?
I think his explanation is, it was along the lines of, some of the recommendations have changed because some weren't needed anymore or things had conditions had changed.
Now, did he say this publicly at the council meeting?
Yes.
Have you talked to Rotkin, had a meeting? Because I know, for example, he's pretty accessible to most community members. I mean, if you want to make an appointment with him and even tape him, He will accept an interview. Have you considered grilling this guy on this subject specifically?
I haven't, but what I have considered is writing up a report based on the new research I've just done, which revealed the fact that we have such a low rate of arrest rate in Santa Cruz for rape cases, and delivering that to all council members and asking to meet with them individually to discuss it, and just laying it out with fully documented and rebutting these explanations that went to the grand jury, that agreed that, yes, we've got a high rate of rape because of this shift to a computer system which captured more crimes. That's a smokescreen. It's meaningless.
It doesn't sound so much meaningless. It sounds false.
Thank you. Yes.
I don't understand how, unless you're saying that it's easier to... I guess you're saying that they had incompetent record-keeping before because it wasn't on a computer, and now they have better record keeping. It's hard to imagine that with such a serious crime as rape. And what's the average number of rapes per year in Santa Cruz? Do we have a
reported?
Yes.
40 to 50 reported. Rapes and attempted rape. There are more sexual assaults.
Right.
But
if you consider those, I mean, that's not a huge number of crimes to keep track of. I mean, that's only 40 to 50. These are serious crimes.
Exactly.
And you don't need a computer to keep track of. I mean, the idea that the addition of a computer would make it. Would suddenly make the reported rape rate jump up. Maybe.
Well, it's worse than what you're saying.
Maybe people have sexual attraction to computers. Maybe there's a more.
Well, it's worse than what you're saying, Robert, because if they were saying that we were making mistakes before, now with computer we're accurate, I could go along with that. They're not saying that. They're saying that this leap from about 20 a year to 50. Was because when they shifted to a computer technology, it captures more crimes, the implication being that those other cities just didn't capture as many crimes. So they're suggesting that our police department labels something attempted rape where other police departments wouldn't even consider it attempted
rape. Well, maybe you should talk to your buddy Patty Sapone in the police department.
I have tried.
Who, you know, can explain you further exactly how this capturing process, I mean, is it a hostage situation? Is it, is this a steel net, is this thing from a rope net? I mean, I'm not sure what they mean by capturing more.
Well,
they're
saying they're more liberal,
about.
That they include crimes that other jurisdictions wouldn't call rape or attempted rape, and that is... I'm sorry, but that is nonsense. Number one, it's insulting to other police jurisdictions who I'm sure would not agree with them. And it's the elements
have
of...
Have you checked with those other jurisdictions? I mean,
yes, I have. Not all of them, but I have checked
with others. What jurisdiction,
for
example, disagrees with this?
Well, it's not a jurisdiction disagrees. I made inquiries as to how do people determine whether it's an attempted rape or a sexual battery, because that's basically what the city is saying, the city and the police department, that they are more generous in their definitions. And when I asked... to get an example from the records person who's no longer there, what he would classify as attempted rape, and then checked with other people I know in other communities. I'm thinking of Santa Barbara. I have not spoken to the police directly, but I've spoken to people who deal with the police and know these issues. And it's always difficult to determine, is this an attempted rape or was the guy just grabbing the woman for some other purpose?
Well, the claim here is that, is that not so much with comparison to other communities, but rather they're saying that in Santa Cruz itself, they changed the definition of rape or what this category of crime was so that while it was only 20 in 1984, suddenly in 2004 it was 54 or something.
Yeah, up in the...
You
exactly.
know, and they're saying that the reason for this is because... I don't think it has anything to do with computer or pencil and paper. They changed the criteria, and they said, well, we're now going to include this a broader swath. We're going to include sexual assaults, you know.
But they're not. They can't do that. These are crimes that go to the federal government, and they're quite strictly defined.
So you're saying that, in fact, there was no change in the category between 1984 and 2004. Are you saying that Patty Sapone was lying?
I think all of the police in the police department who have used this rationale, when you talk with them one-on-one and say, run that by me again, what do you mean? And just the question you asked, what you get is... Very
a mystified look.
Yes. Well, no, what you get is a lot of words signifying nothing. It's non-understandable. and Joanne Archambault, who came to do training for the police department. I managed to bring her here, a few obstacles. She's an excellent, excellent trainer. And I said, Joanne, can you make any sense out of this claim? And she says, no, I don't quite understand what they're talking about. So I think it is a red herring.
You're hoping to go away.
Right. Yeah, but I think the missing piece, Robert, that I could never understand, you know, the numbers have gone up relative to other communities who...
More important, relative to the community, the Santa Cruz
community. Relative to our community, where we used to have 20 or so reported. Now, maybe they were making a mistake.
The population was less in 1984 than it is now.
That's true, so
but
absolute
it wasn't
numbers.
That much less.
Right.
The population has not doubled, has it?
Population has doubled since I moved here in 75.
Right, but not since 84, I don't think. But
or 90. We're talking what we're talking about is a spike in the year 2000. And in the year 2000, it went from, I could pull it out and have a look and give you the exact numbers, but roughly it went from something like 20 to 50-something. And...
So
interestingly
going
enough...
Going up from 20, not in 1984, but 20 in 2000?
Here we go. Yes, here's the rate of rape, and you can
You're
see
showing
that.
Me a graph here.
A spike.
So in 2000...
That's rate, so it's
so
not
rape,
absolute numbers.
So the rape rate went from 0.55 per
which is the state average.
In 96 to...
99.
1.7.
Yes. The spike in that year 2000 is what they're saying was caused by the computer. But look at this comparison, Robert. In 1996, Santa Cruz had one of the highest rates of arrest for rape, 65%. Incidentally, that's where LA is. They routinely have over 50%, close to 60%
of
cases.
What were the absolute number
cleared.
Of rapes that year, do you know?
I don't know in LA. But
no, I mean in Santa Cruz.
Oh, in
96,
I'd have to look at this.
The reason I ask is because, yep. I mean, you might have had more arrests because there was a significantly smaller number of rapes, and it might have been easier, it might have been more fortunate. But you're saying, you're suggesting...
Well, there's any reason, but if you look at the trend...
Have investigative techniques degraded since then? Is that what you're suggesting?
Sharply. Listen to the difference. From 1996, Santa Cruz, we had 65% of reported rape cases were cleared by arrest or exceptional means. Then it went 97 is 57%. I won't read the years, just go down the years or up the years. Then it's 59%, then it's 45%. Then in 2000, it drops to 21%, and we've never risen much out of the 20s since. Last year, it was 13%. The West Coast average is 42%. So in the year 2000, it had nothing to do with switching from paper and pencil to computer. Something happened in the police department that they no longer were investigating rapes.
Now, do you have any independent indication that this is true? I mean, all you have is an indication that the figures are dropping, and your conclusion is that investigation has changed.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, do you have anybody saying... You know, I'm in the investigation department of the rapes, and indeed we changed our practices.
No.
So you haven't got anybody.
No. And that would be, I think, very difficult to get. But if people went and looked at the police reports and read the police reports before that date and after, I think you would see that this is happening. I think what we should call for is an independent audit.
You're speculating. You're not remembering from reading police reports because you were on the commission.
No, I wasn't on the commission in 96. I was on the commission in 81 through 87,
right.
And I read the reports, and the same problem, little or no investigation.
And then when did you join the commission again?
In 2002 or 2003.
Have you talked to anybody who was on the commission during the late 90s to get a sense as to what they're feeling? Because they did read the reports, right?
I don't think commissioners... I always have read reports, but no, I haven't. I don't know. That's further research to find out who was on the commission then and who read the reports.
Because the claim that there's bad investigation, though it's a plausible claim, it doesn't have independent evidence unless you actually get some facts on what the investigations, how they went, how the procedures went, or you get some internal discussion. I mean, maybe people from the DA's office could be helpful here. I don't know, or does this all happen internally within the police department? It's not too clear. I know they tried to push it off into the DA's office, but sometimes DA's office and the police department can be pretty close. They kind of go back and forth with each other.
According to Councilmember Rotkin, they are at loggerheads with each other, and they point the finger at the DA. And one of the recommendations that came out of that joint committee was that the police chief, that the city manager should facilitate a meeting with the police chief and the district attorney to resolve some of these issues. And that was one that was conveniently dropped from the list of recommendations when it 6 months later found its way to city council. You're right, I can't prove that, and that's why I think an independent audit should be done. I can speak that I read the reports for the last 3 years, and I would say, again, little or no investigation.
And my question is this a change from 95 or 96?
Well, that's what has to be demonstrated by reading the report.
Maybe you can talk to, I mean, those files are open to the Commission of Prevention of Violence Against Women. Are they opened?
Yes.
So in theory, you can, of course, you yourself have been bounced off that board.
I should say, yes.
You weren't reappointed, even though it's customary to be reappointed, and you attempted to through three council members to get reappointed, and you believe, as I understand it, that the reason you're not reappointed was because you raised your voice and said, "What's going on here? Let's take a closer look at this." And they all said, "Nah."
I think that's pretty obvious, and I think that there was a pretty concerted effort from staff and one commissioner who. There's a couple of commissioners for whom any critique of the police department is a no-no, and so I think.
And who is that?
Commissioner Bob Campbell.
Bob Campbell.
In particular.
My old buddy Bob Campbell,
yes.
A pro-police guy?
Yes.
Bob, come on now.
Very much so. And the current chair, and with all due respect, I think he's a fine person. But the approach is we can get to the same place if we build bridges with the police department. But they haven't done the reading of the reports. They haven't participated in all of this work that led us to this place. And I can say I've been quite polite and collegial with the police department right through this until it became obvious that there were some problems, and then the nastiness came forward.
Have you been able? Do you have contacts on the CPVAW that would enable you to say, look, read over the 96 and 97 reports and give me your impression of, because I presume that these reports are now closed to you, right?
Yes, yeah.
Although you are a professional up at the University of California, mm-hmm. Again, your position there is?
I'm director of rape prevention education.
So in theory, you know.
It's all with the goodwill of the department unless you were able to take it to a higher level.
But you have friends on the commission, presumably, who would be interested in looking this over.
I can try that. I have found going to that public meeting yesterday of the stakeholders.
I want you to talk about that.
It was very well attended.
Well, let's just first of all say what that is. This mm-hmm. is a meeting at the community policing room or the community police department room.
Mm-hmm.
And it was what? It was in response to this report that came back?
No. In fact, the report was not highlighted in it. It was one of the possible areas for future work.
What was the meeting about?
The meeting was to bring together people who would working in the area of domestic violence and sexual assaults and might be interested in where the commission is going so the commission can hear from them, are we going in a good direction? And everybody got up, and it was interesting that it's the planning director who now facilitates the meeting. So we have more and more male voices. I'm all for men being involved against violence against women, but there's a fine line between involvement, which is encouraged, and taking over, which is discouraged by women who've worked in this field for, decades.
So how many people attended?
It was well attended. I'd say there could have been 50 people there.
And was this sort of a police department manipulated event?
Came out of the commission's retreat, and they wanted to. And I think it
by
was
by retreat, you don't mean their withdrawal. You mean they're,
right,
they have a kind of a chatter session. They go into
exactly,
commune with each other, and
it's all very good. I'm totally in support of this. What I'm not in support of is burying the report.
What did they talk about?
They talked about they laid out the plan, which was in about six areas. One is education in the schools, and another one is evaluating programs, and one of them was the report on rape, but it was characterized as updating the report on rape. it wasn't, there was no mention at all of the findings of the report and addressing the problems that we all outline from the police department. That has been buried. I went up and put, we all had stickies, you know, post-it notes to go up and put up. Mm-hmm. On mine, I put, connect the dots, Santa Cruz, lowest rate of arrest for rape, highest rate of rape.
Now this,
and
this
somebody put like that, look at this, but it was buried. It wasn't acknowledged.
So this meeting was, let me get the form of the meeting, because I've seen that this is a so-called, these stakeholders meetings are usually, I find, well, I've been at one of them. I can't say what they usually are.
Mm-hmm.
I was at the one involving the downtown ordinances and rules for street performers that was run by Emily Riley as her sort of, we're going to make it, we're destroying the voluntary guidelines for street performers, but we're going to let you talk about it as we do.
Mm-hmm.
That was her approach. So what exactly? This is a bunch of people at little tables all coming up with little, having the little chat sessions with each other, and then the facilitator is saying, well, table number one has come up with this, table number two is...
Yeah.
And then, but now there was, so there was no... Did they say, well, table number one seems to have agreed that... The police department has really fallen off the wagon in terms of dealing with...
No.
That one didn't come up.
The way the police department is being addressed is building a good relationship with. That is the topic when we talk about
it. You smile, you lick their butt, or you just give them a big hug.
I think they probably are suggesting all three.
I see.
But in terms of these... That's what is so frustrating, because here we have, after years of work, a tangible... piece of the puzzle of how we could reduce rape.
Well, that's your claim. I can see that's a possible explanation, but until I see that you have some indication that objectively there's been a change in investigative procedures between 96 and 2000, you don't have a smoking gun.
Well, the smoking gun is, let's say it's just two variables that are working together, maybe not causal, but you know, definitely the fact is lower rate of arrest, and at the same time that the high rate of rape spiked. So yes, but the smoking gun is, I have read all the reports recently while we continue to have a high rate of rape, and I can say that there is little, with one or two exceptions, there's little or no investigation after a woman or a man reports that they've been raped. Now, just take that on its own. That's an area
but
of
that
great
wouldn't
concern.
That would not, sure, but that wouldn't indicate that there was any difference in 96. In other words, in 96 you had far less rapes, and you had
a greater percentage of people were arrested prior to 2000.
Now, this might also indicate shoddy arrest practices. See, that's another thing. It might indicate, another explanation would be, well, the police are gung-ho to make arrests, so they arrest, you know, the three homeless people down the block that look suspicious. And now, what about the conviction rate? How does that compare with your...
We don't know the conviction rate, because those figures, the police department won't release that information. But
do they have that information, or is that from the district attorney's
office? It comes from the district attorney to the police department.
It's a public record. I don't know why you should be able to get that.
They're saying it's not a public record.
Oh, sure it is. I mean, not the names, but the actual, you know, the numbers, I would say.
Well, I'll just quote from these FBI folks who say that a law enforcement agency's clearance rate, which is what we're talking about, clear by arrest, is essentially its report card. It is the one way a community knows whether the police are doing their job. Higher clearance rates indicate efficient and effective police investigations.
Or framing a lot of people, one of the two.
Well, I think when it comes to a suspect in a rape case, to arrest a suspect in a rape case, I'm not saying that mistakes are never made. They obviously are. But it is rarely, you know, as whimsical as just a framing. You've got to have to arrest and have it going towards court. You've got to have some solid evidence, and you've got to have the investigation to back it up, or it would never be filed by the district attorney's office.
Well, we don't know how many of these cases were filed, right?
No, we don't. We don't know how many
were
filed.
So the police could have got a whole bunch of bogus arrests, and the cases would have been dropped and not filed. In fact, that was one of the claims of why there's such a low filing rate in San Francisco on other crimes, because you know, they claim the DA is so the reason that there's such a there's a high arrest rate and a low mm-hmm. filing rate, and they claim that the DA says, well, it's because the police arrest everybody they want, you know, and they just it's a series of bogus arrests. And frankly, knowing the San Francisco Police Department, I'm not convinced that that isn't the truth. But you know,
you may well be.
But
right.
I don't know about Santa Cruz, and I don't know. Again, it looks like you need more. You need a couple of inside voices on this. You need someone to look over those records from the rape reports from the 90s to see if it's pretty much the same level of what you would regard as lack of investigation of these cases in any meaningful or proper
since
way.
Since 2000.
Right, or even since 96. Was it the same? Was mm-hmm. it the same thing? And, I mean, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be very much concerned mm-hmm. about it now and shouldn't have been concerned about it then, but it may indicate that there hasn't been a decline in the investigation. It may just mean some other factors are pushing up. But the real issue here is, why is the city council and the police department not addressing the issue now? I mean, you've given some suggestions as to how it should be addressed. Did that issue, I guess there was general consensus at the stakeholders meeting yesterday at the police department that the police department is doing a fine job, but what we need is more, more cell phones and more people keeping an eye out for each other.
That wasn't even mentioned. It was simply we all want to work to getting along with the police department. And so what has happened to this issue is basically that it has been buried. When it's when something isn't mentioned, that's how can anyone even evaluate what's
happening? You didn't
carry
a big sign that said, "Why is this issue being buried?" And I expect
no,
next
I didn't.
Meeting you go to.
I want a few friends around me. I don't. I've already, had some
say.
Real. Bob Campbell.
Whistleblowers have no friends.
Well, whistleblowers have no friends. I'm finding that out. But when I've had very nasty comments said directed towards me from like Commissioner Bob Campbell. At a public meeting, it's.
You should hear what they say to me, man.
But anyway, the point being, I think that you're right, it's not proven, but I think it was something to take notice of in terms of the arrest rate and what the reason was. And so I think an independent audit has to be done. Now, do we have any faith in those? I would say that would be much better than an internal audit.
Any rape victims who've. Willing to come forward and spearhead this? That's easy for me to ask for, but
most I have run into people, women who've been raped, and just casually, and not that they've come to see me formally, mm-hmm. and they've shared their dissatisfaction. Now I'm saying I haven't talked to the ones who've been satisfied, so I'll leave it at that.
You put a big ad in the paper saying rape victims. Let's get together and talk about this, or Take Back the Night, which was originally about I think more about activism, and now is sort of a feel-good, artsy-fartsy little deal that everybody kind of pats everybody on the back for.
Right. Yes. I think that that is a possibility, and I've thought about doing that, of having, because the ones I've talked to anecdotally, it's like, keep going, Gillian, because somebody has to do it.
Well, you need some, as you pointed, you need some supporters.
Absolutely.
We're talking with Gillian Greenside. If you want to support her, or if you want to denounce her as a troublemaker who's attacking our fine police department, 427-3772. Don't you forget, that's the number. We have about 8 minutes left in the show. We were going to originally start the show at 6 o'clock, and Gillian had an appointment she had to get to. She couldn't come until 7:15. We were also going to replay and deconstruct Mike Rotkin and his, what do we call it, sugaring over of the situation, his...
Well, he changes. It's a little phrase that misleads people into thinking that what happened, what didn't happen, happened, and what... happened, didn't happen. It's very, very, very serious.
Well, he's on the Public Safety Committee, and his way, I know that he's denied that, for example, frankly, Mike either lies or he speaks in blind defiance of the facts. How's that?
Yes, that will do.
On issues like, I know at Tent City, up at Tent University, when Officer Eveleth was involved in hitting a guy up there, assaulting a person, when they were simply... part of a lawful assembly up there that the university didn't like, and that was a year and a half ago. Rotkin, who I interviewed the next day, insisted that the city police were not involved at all, whereas, in fact, we had visual evidence they were. And, you could never get him to... And similarly with Kennedy when he was on the council and a pregnant woman was struck on the belly with a baton. She subsequently miscarried in the famous May sit-down riots of 1994. You may remember back in at Cathcart and Pacific, where they're putting the sit-down law.
And it extends to tiny little things, but it's for example, at the meeting I was watching the other night on Tuesday night, and Councilmember Rockham was expressing
this is the meeting, not the stakeholders
nothing to do with
meeting,
these issues.
City council meeting where
Councilmember Rockham was exclaiming with incredulity that the council actually spent half an hour talking on the issue of whether people owned their dogs or whether they were guardians, saying the implication was, what a waste of time. I remember when that came before council, there was a student from Mike Rotkin's community study classes whom he helped develop that proposal and do all the organising to get it before council. So it's like, I don't know what word captures that talking out of both sides of the face or whatevers. But I do know that in the council meeting when these recommendations came forward, he totally fabricated the fact that conditions had changed.
The rape recommendations.
The rape recommendations. He fabricated that conditions had changed and that now that's why we didn't have some of the original recommendations. Nothing had changed.
Now, we're going to invite Mike to appear on the air to defend his position, by the way. If you'd like to be part of that debate,
I would very much like to be part of that.
Invited back into the studio. I would face Mike alone on this issue, but frankly, I don't have the stats. And I'm barely able to keep up with Mike around the sleeping ban because I have to cut him off. I have to cut down his mic and tell him to shut up because we have to stop him and say, hold it. Let's go through each of these points that you bring up, because he's a man. I'm not trying. It is personal, of course, because we're talking about a particular person. But here's a powerful city council member.
Yes.
And because he's in a position of power, we have to talk about him as an individual, and in terms of what he does and what he doesn't do.
Well, I'd be advocating he get an award if he was championing our findings and taking this to a place where it would make a difference, but he's not. He's at every step of the way. My jaw would drop at the, and time doesn't permit to give all the examples, but every step of the turn he was defending the police department. It didn't matter what fact came forward. There was an excuse.
I'm afraid I don't recall one instance. He will tell you that in 1982 he was responsible for dealing with the Code Blue cops who beat up and even may have killed a homeless person, and that he exposed them. And he's but I think, and I, you know, that may well have been the case because the Rotkin of '82 is probably different than the Rotkin.
Oh, very different. Different politics. Yes.
I mean, you lived closely with him at that time.
Well, I was involved in electoral politics with Mike from before he was elected to city council, and he has very different politics. I think if you have him on the show, and this was what was suggested in a political group I was in with him, an egg timer, so that he gets a certain amount of time, and then the other person has the same amount of time.
I think that's fair, and we can do that, but I know that doesn't really work with Mike because he is such a skilled debater, and he is so agile and glib that he is able to, as far as I'm concerned, evade and obscure and raise additional extraneous concerns.
But
so quickly. But
I think I can hold my own. It's at city council when you know how it is.
At city council, he gets all the time.
He gets all the time.
And if you try to get time, you may be arrested, as I have found on occasion.
Yes.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to call Mike Rotkin right now and invite him on the air. You may know his home phone number because he's allowed me to call him at his home phone.
I don't. I don't have it on the top of my head.
Right, I don't either. I think what I'll do is it'd be kind of dramatic to call him on the air, and I would do that, but I'm not prepared to do that. But I will call him off air, and I'll invite him to come on and have a discussion with you on this issue. In fact, who knows? Maybe that's Mike Rotkin calling in right now.
Okay.
Mike, you can do it. Let's see who this is. Hi, is this Mike Rotkin, perhaps?
No, but his number is 423-4209.
423-4209. Hang on, I got to find a pen that works. 423-4209. Thank you. Well, let's give Mike a call and let's invite him on the air here and see what we can do with that.
Well, how much time do you have for these issues? Because I don't want him giving a glib little statement and that's the end of it.
Half an hour.
Oh, okay. So there's more time? Okay.
Yeah, let's make it half an hour. And let's see here. Let's call him up at 423-4209. I should be ringing now. Here we go. We have about 3 minutes left, and we'll see what Mike has to say. Boy, somebody's listening to this show. That's good.
That's nice.
That's, it is nice.
Mike Rockin. Hello?
Hello, Mike?
Yes.
Hi, Robert Norris here calling you from Free Radio.
Hi.
You're on the air with me in the studio as Jillian Greensite.
Uh-huh.
And we wanted to invite you as a person who is involved with the three-member Public Safety Committee on the rape report over the last year to come on the air at some future point and discuss that report. Are you up for that?
Sure.
What would be a good time for you? We have Sundays or Thursdays. Which do you prefer, Sunday evening, Sunday in the morning, or Thursday in the evening?
Sunday mornings are usually better.
Sunday morning. Are you up for a Sunday morning, Jillian?
I could be, yes.
How about 10 o'clock this coming Sunday for the both of you?
I can't do it this Sunday. Actually, I already have a commitment.
How about 10 o'clock next Sunday?
Jack, I think that should work. Hold on.
Okay. I will say one thing about Mike. He does answer his phone at home, and he isn't afraid to be on the air. I appreciate that, particularly since we've been bad-mouthing the poor man. But, hey, that goes with the territory, doesn't it?
Yeah, that'll work.
Okay, so 10 o'clock on Sunday after next, it'll be you and Jillian on the studio. We're talking about maybe half an hour, 45 minutes.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Thank
you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So there we are.
Good.
Debate set up, and I'll give both of you time to prepare. That's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Jillian, I'm sorry we're out of time.
Not at all. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and we'll get back with some live on-the-spot, back and forth on this issue. You'll be able to call in. I'll be announcing it on indiebay.org, so maybe some material. I'll be back on Sunday with another edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, 9:30 in the morning, so come on in and then, and we'll chatter some more. Jillian, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much, Robin.
All righty.
I didn't know.
just don't know what's in my heart and why I love you so. I love you, baby, like a mine of love gold. Come on, sugar, let the good time roll. Hey! People live and make believe that keep a lot of dirt up their sleeve. But my love, baby, isn't the kind that fools. Come on, baby, let the good times roll. Hey. Hey. Let the good times roll. Oh, let the baby come on and let that into your soul. If it's understood, it's even nicer when you're feeling good. You got me flipping like a flag on a pole. Come on, sugar, let the good time roll. Hey! Oh, let the good time roll.
Gone.